ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Remember when everyone smoked indoors? Or how about when we drank raw milk? And when we didn't have to wear bike helmets or seatbelts in cars? And when teachers were allowed to wallop kids?
What?
I can't believe that! Ah, the good old days, hey? Maybe not. I'm Tiliotti Black, and my new podcast, Wait, They Did What?, shows kids today just how good they've got it. Find it on the Kids tab of the ABC Listen app.
Whether the government likes it or not, political voices, including those who are not always allies, and increasingly the general public, are talking about a gas profits tax. A grassroots and political campaign has been simmering, and the timing of a global energy crisis has strengthened the arm of those pushing the government to make a change now. Now, today, a Greens-led inquiry on the matter has officially begun. But institutionalists like Prime Minister Anthony Albanese may be a bit nervous. Are they listening? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Karvelis.
And I'm Raf Epstein from ABC Radio in Melbourne.
You are. And Raf, we mentioned this was in the mix of possible tax reform in the upcoming budget. I talked about that with Jacob yesterday. But the matter is going a little bigger and a little higher and a little more exciting, really, thanks to the start of a parliamentary inquiry into the taxation of gas resources in Canberra. Backstory here, get this, big profitable companies, not so popular with both left-wing and right-wing voters, and they're not afraid to say what they think. An inquiry is helping that along, isn't it?
It's amazing how many people are willing to contemplate more tax on gas profits. Worth keeping in mind, too, that the current tax we've got, the revenues to the gas companies have gone up, the tax take has gone down. So that's the tax system they were dealing with. I tried to make a little list of
all of the people. How does that make sense, Raffy? How does that make sense?
Well, let's come to whether or not it makes sense.
You make more money and you're paying less tax? Why can't my taxation system
look
like that?
Which is why you would think the time is ripe for change. But if there is one thing that is most on the government's mind, it is, of course, the energy crisis. But first, let's look at who wants the change. It's pretty broad, right? You've got the Greens, you've got Pauline Hanson. I was actually looking at Pauline Hanson's gas reservation policy, which is, if that was implemented, every gas company in the world, I think, would be pretty horrified because she wants to keep 15% of everything, including existing contracts. You've got environment groups. You have the Commonwealth Bank chief, Matt Comyn. He was talking about not a tax on the current ones, but a tax on the future ones. And then you've also got, and I think this goes to the grassroots campaign you're talking about, people who are active online in the podcast world. You've got Punters Politics, you've got Batuta Advocate. I thought the other great indicator is David Pocock raised, close to $100,000 for those billboards really fast to push the idea of a gas tax, including a billboard in Jim Chalmers' electorate. So the grassroots movement is there. I would actually say to you, the people I've spoken to in government, they buy the argument. They actually accept a lot of the argument that it's a good idea. Here's the big but, though, and I've literally spoken to people who've been in the room with the Japanese and Korean governments and companies. Right now, we want Asian nations to guarantee we have fuel coming in. So if we are taxing the fuel going out, you don't have room to do that. Someone actually said to me, you don't have room to move on this if there's no diesel coming into Australia. Like, that is really the way to think about it. The companies that invest in gas, they are either sovereign wealth funds or they're actually owned by an Asian government. A super profit tax means if you've got an existing contract and you make more money, you pay more tax. That is the very opposite, isn't it, of what did Albo say at the meeting in Malaysia? So he went to Malaysia, he was on the stage with the Malaysian PM. One of the things about Australia is that when we do a deal, we stick.
Yes.
That is what makes Australia who we are.
Yeah, okay.
What's he saying?
Yeah, that's the line that piqued my interest like it clearly did yours. And I thought, okay, he's sending a message here. This isn't an accidental sentence. He's telling us and telling them, crucially, that he understands the stakes are high at the moment and they're not going to do anything that messes with that. However, getting ready for that rebuttal, if you like, people like David Pocock and others, and I've raised it with people, this very argument in interviews, like, hang on a minute, okay, but do we really want to be upsetting those who are actually helping us get fuel and, you know, front line getting the fuel first, making sure it keeps coming in, because I'll tell you one thing that's worse than gas companies profiteering, not having petrol in your country.
If you don't have diesel. So keep in mind, when the PM says it in Malaysia, I looked this up too,
of
Malaysia provides 14% of our diesel.
Does it?
10% of our petrol. Oh. 11% of our jet fuel. Like, that is sending a message. Oh, you know, the other person, I want to know what you think. The other person, of course, who's made a significant contribution to this, when people like the Greens ask for a gas tax, I know for a fact Japanese and Korean embassies, they track that, they report it back, it gets discussed by those governments. When Ed Husic, former minister, backbencher, what were his words today? It's a missed opportunity if they don't do this in the upcoming budget. How do people in government hear one of their own former ministers and backbenchers saying that? Okay. What was the worst thing you someone said to you about Ed Husic that you can actually repeat on the podcast?
I love that you asked that.
I got it's outrageous that he's front running on this.
Is it?
Well, that's what according to people.
No,
the government.
Yeah, and I'm being provocative, going, is it? Like, to be fair to Ed Husic, on this one, not all things, he's probably poked his nose and on some things that, you know, he wasn't sort of big on in the past. But this, he even was big on holding gas companies to account when he was minister and was front running as minister. So that's when he first annoyed everyone. Let's remember that in terms of gas contracts and the big manufacturers and locking in prices when they were actually dealing with massive spikes in prices and making their work very unaffordable, essentially unprofitable. So, and they were worried about hitting the wall. So he's got form on this. Yeah, it annoys the government. But can I say, like, this is kind of going off topic, but now that you've mentioned his name, He's the only freaking practically person in the Labor backbench now who says anything. Now, I personally think that's very bad for this government. Now, it might be annoying if you're the Prime Minister to have people carping all the time or saying things. I understand you need to keep it in proportion, but you do need people front running some things. And at least Ed Husic's, I think, channeling the voice of, I think, probably mainstream Australia a little, that these companies need to be, you know, held to account and be paying their fair share, all of the sort of rhetoric around that. Let's move it to, are they going to do it though? Well, the Albanese line makes me tell you no, I don't think so. I don't think they think it's the right time. However, when is the right time if a consensus is built and if it's the right thing to do? That's a big question, Raf.
It's the perfect example of politics being the gap between the world as you would like it to be and the world as it is. Like I said before, I spoke to a few people inside government. They are persuaded by Ed Husic's argument, but not now. Like, we are literally at the end of the fuel supply line. You would actually be saying to companies who've already invested here, because if you want to raise any significant amount of money, you'd have to tax existing contracts, not just new ones, and it'd need to be significant. You're literally saying to the people who are sending us fuel now, and let's be honest, we don't know if we're going to have fuel rationing in 3 months' time. We could have fuel rationing in 3 months' time if the conflict goes on. We could have. I'm not saying we will have, but the government has to entertain the possibility of it. The world we are in now, I can't see the government doing anything substantial in this. I will offer this note of self-correction. I think last time I was on with you, I said to you, why wouldn't the Prime Minister do it? Because it does look, you know, if you look at the grassroots campaign, if you look at the logic, if you look at a lot of the economists, if you look at even the breadth of people like the Commonwealth Bank boss saying do it, sure. But we're in, I mean, this is upending everything. Like, the toddler who is president is in over his head, but it means we are all in over our heads. None of us know what's going to happen. No one in Iran or the United States knows what's going to happen. In that environment, this government's not touching it, are they?
I think the timing might look right in terms of, you know, my point earlier, left and right, lots of consensus around they need to do this. And, you know, you look at the sort of bottom line, as you were saying, and clearly they could be paying more. Anyone
yes,
can
they
see
could
that.
Be.
They
sure.
are they are profiteering quite enormously. But I think being in this moment of crisis is quite acute. And that's the number one concern for the government.
Also, Ian Verrender's got a great piece online today for the ABC. they're not making a lot of money right now.
Mm.
The gas companies are not stupid. They made a ton of money in the fuel crisis after the Ukraine invasion. Check out Ian's piece. They are not making a ton of money right now. They're not stupid. The bus stops and the tram stops near my house all have ads from the gas industry. They know they've got a bit of an image problem. They know the public are, significant sections of the public are against them. They are also not making as much money, perhaps, as they could. It's interesting. So the political pressure has had an impact. But no, I mean, maybe the government comes up with something in the out years that does a little bit, but I don't see anything significant. Not from this government.
Yeah, unless something really changes.
What, in 2 weeks' time? 3 weeks' time?
I don't know. Like, sure, sorry, but sure. Like, I don't think that's so silly for me to say, because I think things are so rapidly changing. Like, I have got a short attention span and am suited to the world we're in, can I say? Like, I was thinking about this. I am actually, you're laughing because you know it's true. I am a journo suited to the times. Can anyone say that like I can?
Well,
I have the multitasking attention span suited to the Donald Trump times, right, to the populist times.
The unwritten story of the media age is that the media industry is full of people with a three-second attention span. So therefore the technology is very much the way of the brains, runs very much the same way as do the brains of the people in the media industry, which is one of the problems. But that's an aside.
Yes, that is absolutely aside. So my point being,
it could change.
Yes. This war could be resolved and a neat bow could be put on it. I wish that would be the case. And, of course, I'm not stupid. I know the projections, the fallout from the Strait of Hormuz closure is going to be long, regardless of if it's all cleaned up by the end of the day.
Indeed.
So that is the fact. However, there could be lots of developments in coming days. And I think just put that perspective on the gas tax argument. And we also, of course, it'll be very close. But we've got that by-election. The budget will be pretty much wrapped up by the Farah by-election. Yes. But I think it will give us some messages about the way people feel about these sorts of issues, won't it?
I think so.
Not for budget formation, but for mood of the nation.
It'll definitely give us the mood of the nation in one place, although it's it's not a Labor fight. My question to you, the ever on again, off again, there is some what I would call and have called in the past creative tension between the Treasurer and the Prime Minister. It's tension that works. I think most people would say it works at the moment. There's a kitchen cabinet. You throw in Penny Wong and Katie Gallagher as well, perhaps. Does the war or does the gas tax debate, because I think Jim Chalmers was more interested in this in the past, does the war or the gas tax stuff change the relationship? Like, are these the sort of things that would upend what has been a bit of a tense but largely smooth relationship?
Everything's upended at the moment. And my read, and I've spoken to people, is that the government is kind of all hands on deck on this crisis. They know that this is crunch time for them. The Prime Minister's organised this national cabinet on Thursday. Mm. Let's go to that before we get into some other issues. That's an important meeting. Important also in terms of the optics of the meeting as well as what gets organised at the meeting. He has to look like he's on top of this crisis. Mm. He has to look like he's ready to roll on what all of the stages might look like. There's a lot of kind of feverish speculation about what next month might look like in terms of fuel, what stage we'll be in, what the states and territories agree to. Don't forget that even though the Prime Minister went on and talked a big game about a national approach, learning the rules from COVID, already we've seen not such a national approach. We've got this kind of, don't we? We've got a bit of a fuel reserve being organised in WA. Didn't another state say they'll do it? Oh, no, New South Wales said they would consider it. Victoria wants a national approach, yeah, because they're in a hot mess, so they can't organise anything. That's my analysis there. So they need the national government to take control of something. Sorry, it's true.
I'm listening and agreeing.
Yeah, good.
I'm just curious to know, it sounds to me like, we say this a little bit too much. Every budget's the most important budget.
Since the last one.
It really does feel like all of the tensions, all of the political problems, all of the different things that the government has been able to not deal with, feel like a lot of those things may well come home to roost in this budget. It is, as you were mentioning yesterday on the podcast, like it's traditionally the year, because you're so far from an election, where you do the really hard stuff, where you do the really big stuff, where you might even do the big thing that builds the foundation for the next election, really cement, as the PM would like, cement Labor as the sort of the obvious party of power. But those tensions within the government, those tensions with the community about something like a gas tax, how do you deal with a nation like the United States when they are our closest ally and they are putting us deeply in the poo and people in countries like Indonesia and Pakistan can't eat because of this crisis? You might not be able to fill up your fuel tank. People can't eat in other countries because of this crisis. It really feels to me like the budget will be a bit of a CAT scan or an X-ray, actually, of the government. Yeah, it'll tell us a lot about this government's character. What do they really stand for? What do they really want to do? And that even goes to the sort of the national cabinet thing you're talking about. The PM is portraying his national address, the way he does national cabinet, his informal and formal calls with journalists. He's preparing everyone for the fact that things could get worse, but they don't think right now things will get worse, but they know that things could be a lot more dire in the future. That's like a little bit of a template for everything this government has done. He thinks he lays down a process, a way for communicating with the public that shows that he's got ideas, that he wants to run them through the proper processes and that he'll make the right deliberations, and out the other end will come a substantial solution. Like, this is going to be the biggest test of whether or not process, sober adults in charge actually works, number one. And number two, can they change the direction of the country, right? Because if there's one thing that's coming through, it's in the gas campaign, it's in the polling numbers around One Nation, even if they dropped a bit, people want a change, right?
Like, yes.
There's, most people don't agree on much. They want things to change in some way. Mm. If they don't change in a crisis, will they ever change?
The problem for the government, though, is even if they do signal and signpost change, feeling that change for you and me, for ordinary people living their lives, is very hard. It takes a while. Even if you change negative gear and capital gains tax, like that shake up in terms of when young people notice the difference. Oh, yeah, it's a bit easier to get a house now, and they say at the pub. That takes a while.
I'll never feel that.
Yeah, but they need it signposted.
Yes.
And signposting does help because it sends the message, oh, we are taking this seriously. And speaking of that, Housing Minister Claire O'Neill was out of the blocks early this morning, actually. We're recording this on a Tuesday, spruiking a deal with Tasmania to build homes for first home buyers. Now, this deal supports construction of 4,000 homes, including up to 2,101 for first home buyers. It's part of the election promise that looms over Labor to build all of these homes in this cohort, 1.2 million homes across the country that they won't get to. I'm sorry, Raf, they say, they keep telling us they will. They know they won't.
No point in having a goal if it's not ambitious, Patricia.
I've always backed them in the idea of being ambitious, actually, and not reneging on trying to get somewhere, because I think it forces your hand a little. However, I don't think they're going to get there. But what are they doing here? What's Claire O'Neill trying to do? She's trying to shift the needle, but it's just never fast enough.
I actually think they're not doing stuff that is substantially different to, say, 12 months ago. What will be substantially different, or we expect to be substantially different, is something to do with limiting the tax breaks for investors in the budget, right? Like, so if they change something around negative gearing, more likely they change something around the capital gains tax on real estate investment. Are they trying to set up a political trap for Angus Taylor on budget night? Because Andrew Bragg, he was on with Sally Sarah on RN Breakfast this morning. She actually asked him, okay, so if there are capital gains or negative gearing changes announced in this budget, would you try to repeal them at the next election? The coalition tripped up on a similar question at the last budget before the last election. Do you think that's what the government's aiming for?
Yeah, I do. I think that's exactly what they're aiming for. I think they want to put them in a situation where they have to argue the case, right? Like, they have to explain. And politically, it comes with risk still for the government, by the way. Like, it's not easy, but if they can start doing politics better, and I think they've already demonstrated, actually, I think over since the last election, that they have cleaned up their act and they're doing politics better. Remember, they were, you know, lots of good ideas, but not always very good at execution of the message. This one they've got better at. I think that's what they're trying to do, but will it work? Like, where are people at, Raf? I mean, broadly, obviously people have a range of views. It's a very large and diverse country.
But I think it'll be difficult for Angus Taylor. You know, the line he's running at a lot, if you tax something, you get less of it. I mean, in the past, sure. I think in the current environment, going back to what I said, people want things to change. If the federal government says we're going to do something that'll make it a bit tougher for people who invest in housing and a bit easier for people who are buying their first home, and Angus Taylor pops up on 7:30 or on ABC TV or ABC Radio the next morning and says, oh, I oppose this and I'm going to repeal it at the next election. I just think that puts them in an incredibly difficult place. I mean, we could be wrong, and like, you know, housing policy, Labor's come a cropper with housing policy before, but the mood shift, the demographic shift, the rise in house prices, I think that places them somewhere very difficult. And I keep coming back to every time the Liberals have an election review, they say we didn't say enough to younger people, people who aren't white, and female people in Australia. In fact, we said the wrong things to women, non-white Australians, and younger people. Now they're going to be saying something else that antagonises younger people. And while they're at it, I mean, it's a bit vague, the policy that Angus Taylor mentioned last week, but they're going to prioritise homes for citizens. They're going to prioritise homes for people who are here. Most of our growing economy, everything from healthcare to construction, it's full of people from other countries who don't vote. They've got relatives here who do vote. So you're saying, A, we're going to prioritise homes for citizens. B, we're not going to prioritise homes for younger people. It just seems they keep on talking themselves into a tighter corner and restricting their ability to reach the voters that they need to reach. Is that too broad?
Well, I think there is a cost-benefit analysis on all political, like risk versus return of what they're trying to do. The message on housing, you're right about the 5% deposit and who they prioritise, who they want to, you know, allow to do that scheme. I think they would argue that it's not actually about race, because you can be a brown Australian citizen who then gets the 5% deposit. It's about this Australia first, you know, something that's going off in lots of other countries, as we know, approach. And I think that does resonate with people. So if they, I don't know if they're capable of this, but if they're able to say, if you are an Indian person who is of Indian background, sorry, but is a full Australian citizen, you'll be first. That could work, right? Like, oh, yeah, we should be first. We made it through. You are right, though. That's hard to land, because how easy is the scare campaign? How easy is it? Like, it's seriously, it's shooting fish in a barrel, my friends, isn't
also, it? Also, one in three people were born here. Half the country has got a parent that wasn't born here. Anytime you're making any distinction between people who weren't born here and people who were, people who are citizens and people who aren't, you're 100% right. It really resonates with a segment of the population, but it resonates in the wrong way with the segment of the population who you've lost. That's the difficulty. Quite apart from the fact most government programs only apply to citizens anyway, so I think they're sort of raising distinctions that don't necessarily need to be made. But I do think in the immediate short term, the most interesting thing to watch, other than the fuel crisis and where it leads us, if they come up with an investor tax break that's gone, if that's the government's proposal on budget night, what does Angus Taylor do? It's easy to oppose it, and you can even vote against it in the parliament. I think that's sort of a respectable political position. But what do you say when people like you or me ask them, are you going to repeal it at the next election?
Yes.
That's hard.
That's the hard bit.
That's tough.
Because that's binary, right? That's it's not, you can't get your head, you can't avoid that. It's either you're for it or you're against
it. Also, once people have been given something, to then take it away, and they made that mistake, they were going to repeal the tax cut after the last election if they were to win. That was the trap that was set on budget night. Will you repeal the income tax cut? And Angus Taylor said yes. That meant Albo could go to the election saying they want to have higher taxes than I want to give you. That doesn't sound like an easy place for Angus Taylor to land. But that's why we all look forward to budget night, right?
We look forward to budget night because it's hopes and dreams night, and some of them are dashed, and some of them, some of them are delivered.
Budgets are about choices, Patricia.
Look, I want to tell you a little thing that I just think is a funny anecdote because I've been around a while, as you know, as have you. I used to do budgets during the Howard Costello era, where they were so targeted often at people with, you know, young families in their 30s. I was in my 20s. Or
I got it all. I got the first homeowner stuff.
So you
got
all.
The baby bonus.
This is where
stuff.
I'm going.
I got it all.
Or boomers, of course, who are now getting older, but they were still, you know, working and so forth. And I would make jokes about how I felt like robbed all the time. And then all of the taking back these benefits happened when, of course, I started.
I see you missed out.
Yes. So budget night, when I talk about hopes and dreams.
Yes.
Robbed.
True.
A message to younger Gen Xers, that is. Younger Gen Xers. It's a big group. I'm at the end of it. Like robbed.
Well, the other.
Basically identify as a millennial in terms of the robbing. Robbed.
I don't know that you can switch your generation identification.
If you're on the cusp, I'm a Zennial.
Okay.
So I'm, no,
but
I'm,
also
Jess, our producer, is nodding because she's like, yeah, PK's onto it. I'm on the cusp. I didn't get the stuff. You got the baby bonus, did you?
You can't be both a Pisces and a Gemini. Got two of them.
Mate.
Got two baby
cusp.
Bonuses. The other thing to think about hopes
you
and dreams being dashed.
Seriously.
Well, just gas tax, the mining boom under John Howard, when a lot of mining companies made a lot of money and weren't taxed as much as they could have been. They set the Howard and Rudd years set us up for the current gas tax that we have in many ways. When they make decisions on budget night, capital gains tax that Peter Costello changed in 1999 has had a huge impact, maybe in really long tail, really unintended ways. So we often talk about politics on the night in those sort of short-term political, you know, results, but they make huge, they change the direction of the country in ways you don't even realise. And we'll be talking about this budget maybe in 5 or 10 or 15 years' time, the same way we think, oh, hang on, how do we let these contracts be signed that allow the gas companies to make that sort of super profit without getting an extra tax? So budgets matter, right?
They certainly do. That's it for politics now today. Thanks for joining me, Raf.
Absolute pleasure, Patricia.
And tomorrow,
Millennial Patricia.
Zennial. I wasn't lying.
Sorry,
Zennial. But I was saying, you know, that if I know lots of people my age listen to this pod because they stop me and they, you know, and they're like nodding furiously.
Can I correct you?
Yeah.
I don't think you can be a Zennial because then you're on the cusp of Generation Z and Millennial.
Xennial.
That's better. I think
you're
an ex-Xennial
like
or something.
I just can't speak.
I don't think Xennial's the right cusp terminology.
Go away. I'm from a non-English speaking background.
Always
tomorrow, the Pod family member David Spears joins us to unpack. And if you have a question for us, please send it to theparty@abc.net.au. You can send it in Greek, not non-English speaking background. We will answer your questions also in a special edition of The Party Room, question time edition. So it'll be good. I promise the whole week's going to be great. I promise. See you, Raf.
See you later.